The opinions expressed during this program did not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its board, underwriters, volunteers, or members.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. We've got a special show today. I've got three guests in here with myself and Eric. And I'll start on the right. Say your name and where you work, I guess.
Hi, I'm Peter Wiedroder, and I work for Dow AgriSciences in Kamakani.
And what's your job there? Are you the general manager guy?
I am called the site leader.
The site leader.
Yep.
Okay, and?
Good afternoon. My name is Kirby Kester. I work for BASF Plant Sciences in Kekaha. I'm a applied genetics manager, which is basically just a fancy word for nursery manager.
Okay.
I'm Ken Lindsay.
Oops.
There we go.
I'm Ken Lindsay from Ono Organics in Moloa. We're a certified organic farm. I guess my title would be Farm Pa. That's what I get called around there a lot. But just farm manager.
And then I also invited you in here because you used to work for Pioneer.
Yeah, I worked there for 2 years.
And then what was your job there?
I first started off just working in the field, doing pollinations, harvesting, you know, just general field labor. And then I got promoted to working in a shade house where we did what was called T1 research, where you just get pretty much the newest genetic material and try to make corn seed out of that.
Okay. And then for people who've listened to this show for past couple of years, I have to proclaim my bias. Everybody knows that I'm kind of been harshing on this industry here, the biotech industry, but we're welcoming them in here, and I want to say thank you to both of you gentlemen, all three of you, and Eric, everyone. These two men and myself have spent about 7 hours together, actually, between going and looking at your place and looking at mine, and we're just kind of really trying to explore everybody's different agricultural practices. And so I appreciate your coming up. I appreciate you sitting in the hot seat. And for the listener out there, this first hour, we're going to talk about the hot button issues, and then in the second hour we're going to take calls because we want to really have a chance to get to it. And so I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, Felicia, I really appreciate you having us on. I appreciate you coming out and taking a look at our farm, and I really, really enjoy taking a look at your backyard and seeing all the stuff that's growing back there. And I still got the smell of lemon basil on my hands, so I'm just loving the smell of the lemon basil that we got on the farm. So
yeah, and that was at the food forest.
Yeah, and that was really impressive. I'm really glad we got to see that, and thanks to Paul and all those guys who showed us the food forest. A lot of cool things going on over there. And thanks again for having us here. It's great to be having some dialogue. There is a lot of concern out there for what our industry does and everything. So we want to have this dialogue and try to put some of those concerns to rest. So.
And we're stoked that you do.
Mm-hmm. And Ken? Thank you for coming in, and we're stoked that you have both perspectives, right? And you've been an organic farmer for how long now?
I've been having my own business for 4 years, but just been doing certified organic for like the last two in Moloa. Before that, I was in Kalaheo for a while.
Yeah, and just also so the listener knows, these guys, I sent them a few of what I consider the hot films on this issue. We looked at genetic roulette, and right, guys?
Yes,
you watched the genetic roulette. And then also there's another film called Killing Fields, which is really Monsanto, which is not your same company, but it is looking at probably the big name in the industry and harsh agricultural practices in Paraguay. So just so the listener knows that we're talking about all the rough stuff. So today, we've been looking at soil and what's going on in my yard, which is pure permaculture because it has very, very little added input. Sometimes if the park is cutting trees behind me, I might get some ground trees or I might get a little bit of horse manure. But beyond that, my yard's thriving really well. Just with what I call the micro herd. And so we were looking at that. And then at the food forest at Kalihiwai, we saw a really good example of conscious organic farming. And Ken, where are you in the mix? How do you do your farming?
It's definitely a commercial organic farm, but with a lot of permaculture principles in place, and definitely always with a focus on conservation. We work a lot with the NRCS, which is the National Resource Conservation Service, and they pretty much set you up to make sure that, you know, you're taking care of the soil and using water appropriately. So the reason I can't do full-time permaculture right now, I guess, is economics. It'd be hard to, I make my living at this, so it'd be hard to make a living just off of that type of food production. But it's definitely something that I'm trying to shift more to in the future and just really trying to expand the plants that I use into more perennial plants.
Okay, and how many acres do you farm?
There's 10 acres on the property, and I intensively farm 2.3.
Okay, and then the others is like orchard.
Yeah, it's orchard that's been there anywhere from 7 to 12 years ago. The trees were planted at different times.
Okay. And then, Peter, you work with the same NRCS?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we also have a soil conservation plan with them, so it kind of dictates, or we kind of work with them to what we do for soil erosion and for conservation. So we have a plan together that we're working on. We want to make sure that the ground is covered with either our crop or with a cover crop, and we also want to make sure we're using the best practices available to make sure we don't have any soil erosion.
And how many acres are under your Kuleana? How many are you taking care of?
We take care of about 4,000 acres total.
Okay, and how much of that is under cultivation?
We only grow one corn crop a year. So we probably cultivate maybe 2,000 of that 4,000 acres that have crops on them. The rest of them are in a conservation state. But we have, our farm is probably more under a conservation state than has a crop on it, because corn is a 100-day crop. So, you know, we have 100 days we have corn on it, and for the rest of the year we're doing cover crops and soil conservation, yeah.
Okay, and Kirby, your BASF does something a little bit different. Do you have fields under cultivation?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have about 1,000 acres leased out on the west side, and grow a lot of corn, rice, soybeans, a little bit of canola, and a little bit of sunflower.
Okay, and are all of your crops genetically modified?
No. We have, some of them are. Sunflower doesn't have any genetically modified traits. It's all non-GM traits. But the other ones have either GM or non-GM. There's traits of various, both breeding methodologies out there.
Okay, and so, Peter, on your crops, what percentage of your crops are genetically modified?
I can't tell you, give you an exact number. I mean, it depends year to year. It depends on what our customer demands are and what we're growing. But, but it's the 50-50 range. About equal of both of GMO and non-GMO.
So the non-GMO, tell me a little bit about those seeds. What does that mean?
Well, what we do here in Kauai is we grow seed corn. So what we do is we are, I don't know if you want to call it the manufacturing plant that grows more corn, okay? So we start off with a handful of corn that we're given from our corporation, from our research, and we're basically, we call that Generation Zero, and they say, hey, we need more of this seed. So we'll grow it, we'll get more seed out of it, we'll plant it again, get more seed, plant it again, get more seed. Sometimes we do it here, sometimes it goes back to the Midwest. It all depends on our planting structure. But ultimately, the product that we sell is a hybrid seed. So the parent seed that we grow, both male and female, we'll actually cross that into a hybrid, and that's the seed that's sold to the farmers. Most of the hybrid seed we sell, corn seed we sell to farmers, is GMO. But the cross between the male and the female to make the hybrid, mostly one of the male or female will have the GMO trait, the other one will not. So half of the seed corn that we grow, half of the parent seed is non-GMO, half of it is GMO. Ultimately, it gets crossed, forms a hybrid, and that's what gets sold to the customer.
So it would be a hybrid of a non-GMO and a GMO, but so there's genetic modification in most all the seeds that actually go to the mainland?
Yes. If we grow hybrid here, yes. Sometimes we just grow the parent seed to send back to the mainland, and they will do the hybrid production on the mainland.
Okay, but the goal for Dow is that all of them will have these special genetic traits.
I wouldn't say it's the goal of Dow. It's the actuality right now. It's what the customer wants. So I would say that a vast majority, 80+% of what we sell does have GMO traits in it, but we sell what the customer asks us to buy.
Okay. And then for most of the show, we are going to, you know, we're going to presume that our listener is on the side of the argument that I am, that is very concerned about this part of the industry. That's why you guys are in here. So it's definitely not a commercial for the industry. This is like we're looking at the things that cause people concern. And I know that you guys are a competitor, and is it correct to say a junior competitor of Monsanto? They kind of dominate. Is that right? Do I have that right? There's five big seed companies.
Monsanto was leading in sales, yes. So they're the big kid on the block.
They're the big kid on the block. Because this week, one thing that is pretty interesting is this is the International March on Monsanto Week, which many people would say is actually a big cry of concern that this industry isn't healthy. And that we can be looking at the science on it. Like, I know from your perspective, there's plenty of studies that are out there that say that this is not non-harmful for people, that it's okay to eat, it's okay to cultivate. And there are many, many studies that say that the Environmental Protection Agency feels like the chemicals that are utilized to grow this are safe. And if I can just lay it to rest at the front end of the conversation, that there are many people, including myself, that have trust issues on that. That we look at who's funding this, why, maybe. So anyway, I don't want to say we don't believe you. I don't want to personalize it that way, but we don't believe the industry. And this weekend is a special weekend. It is a worldwide march on Monsanto. There's estimated to be about 2 million people around the world that are coming together to march against this, or at least be demonstrating against it. 49 countries. There is across the planet, like Russia, China, many places giving a lot of pushback. And on Kauai, if you don't see a big turnout, I'm going to kind of shift for a second here and give a big shout out to my beloved friend, Auntie Kathy Kalehua Taihook Ham Young Pfeffer. I want to get every little piece of her life in there in that name. Wonderful soul. She's been very much my tutu friend. She seems like a young woman, 82 and a half. She passed away in April 27th. Her celebration of life is this Saturday. So, like, certainly for me, I'm going to be there helping with that. I'm going to just segue for a moment and tell people about Auntie Kathy's services. 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock at Wai'oli Church in Hanalei, the Green Church. 11 to 12, that 8 to 11 is come in, visit with family, and, you know, make the connection. 11 to 12 is the services. At 1:30, we're going to spread the ashes in the ocean. All family members, and that's a lot of them. So she's got many, many descendants and siblings, and the family are getting in the canoes at Waipa. So if you are blood related, she loves everybody, but that's who's going in the canoes. So there's going to be Hanalei Canoe Club and Mama Lahoa and then Waipa. All their canoes are going in the water. Be there by 1:30 to get in the canoes. There's some boats that are going out also for the very close connection. Then everybody else who's going out on your own crafts or on your surfboards, we're going to make a big ring out in the bay. Don't launch from Waipa. Go Middles or Grandpa's or somewhere else a little bit close so it's not over congested as we're going out through the surf. Hopefully it'll be pretty flat. 2:15, the helicopters are coming. Anyway, that is the plan. And we will be coming in. Felicia is responsible for the music end of the paena there. So bring your ukuleles. We'll have some couple bands that will be playing. But then it's going to be a Kanakapila. So bring your own beer, ice chest, whatever. We're going to have food, but come fed, because probably realistically the food isn't going to be happening till 4 o'clock, but everybody's loved, and even just a shout out to your guys' industry. Family says that the GMO industry actually each, if it wasn't you guys, then it would have been Syngenta and Pioneer. I don't know. Anyway, they've each put forward a tent and some of the tables. So that's kind of a nice piece of community poetry.
Our deepest sympathies.
Yeah, you know, we love her, and she is she's definitely a matriarch of this community, and she's been a big part of what I personally have done, and she was one of the first to really speak out and take action on the GMO Kahlo. And she's a big part of all our poi at Waipa. So that's happening on the same day as the march against Monsanto, so many of us are actually there for Auntie Kathy. Though the march for against Monsanto, that is down near Safeway Shopping Center, 10:30 to 2. Come to the Paina afterwards, or you can come and show your respects before if you're doing both. But I will be a big part of the services.
On a side note, I just wanted to give a shout out to Bill Chamberlain. He turns 60 this Friday, so it's a big day for him and all the family out there. Just wanted to give a shout out to that.
Happy birthday, Bill. Okay, so let's talk about a little bit of the hard stuff. And I think we're also going to kind of agree to disagree on whether this stuff is something we want to eat. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, you know, we are going to have to agree to disagree. I'm hoping that, you know, that we can find some common ground. I hope that we can answer some other questions that that the folks have. You know, but obviously this is a very emotional issue, and it is one that we're probably going to have to try to find a way to agree to disagree on the health aspects of GMO.
Do you eat it?
Absolutely.
Peter from Dow. And then how about, do you handle the chemicals? Have you had any experience in handling the chemicals?
Actually, that is my background. I'm actually a chemical engineer. I've been working for Dow AgriSciences my entire career for 28 years. The majority of that career, 25, 26 years, has actually been on the chemical side. And I was in the manufacturing facilities that produced a lot of the pesticides that Dow AgriSciences sells. So yes, I'm much more comfortable with the chemical side of the business actually than the agronomy side and the seed side of the business. That's been my background.
So you've been in the room with the chemicals, somewhat breathing it or touching it, whatever. Like you have direct contact with these chemicals.
Absolutely, I've worked with the chemicals. I've worked on improving the practices in our chemical facilities my entire career. So yes.
And how's your health?
My health is great. Never spent a day in the hospital.
Okay, all right. And then, Kirby, how about you? Have you had your paws in the poisons?
Well, yeah, I grew up in the heartland of Nebraska and corn country, and my whole life I've just been heavily exposed to working in the fields and around pesticides that are used for crop protection. And been over here for 18 years with the industry, and have at times held chemical applicators licenses myself and done a lot of applications and, you know, have input on the application programs and the worker protection safety and everything. So it's nothing that we take lightly. Pesticides are regulated and there are a lot of controls and safety features about them that are required by the government and within all of our companies. Our companies, if you think about it, are the ones that, most of them are the ones that make these pesticides. They have done the homework on them. They know the makeup of them, and they're very committed to, you know, safe handling. It'd be very bad. It'd be a big black eye for one of a chemical company to have, you know, pesticide poisonings of their employees, you know. So
yeah, I'm working in the chemical side of it. I mean, it takes years and years to get a new pesticide registered. It goes through extensive testing, toxicological studies, residual effects, the effects on the environment. You know, it does take years, 5+ years, to get a new product through the regulatory process for a new pesticide.
So let's talk about the EPA for a moment. Like Michael Taylor, who's the head of the EPA, he's right in that industry. Right. He is a representative. I believe he worked for Monsanto most of his career. So a lot of people, including myself, very concerned about what that is. And then when we've, as I've been learning now, like have labels that are, you know, 100 pages thick, it seems strange to be putting that together with food. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think Michael Taylor was FDA, if I'm not mistaken.
What did I say?
EPA.
Oh, I'm sorry. FDA, Food and Drug Administration.
Right.
And so he's involved, and so he's saying this is safe, but he's career Monsanto.
Yeah.
So there's a credibility gap right there.
There is, and I can see how that can bring that question up, and I don't know. I just looked at it. I looked up some numbers the other day and see that the FDA has like 14,000 employees in it. 2,000 or 3,000, I can't remember exactly how many, were involved in the pesticide registration branch, the guys who, you know, look at the data and the tests and everything before a pesticide can come to market. And then there's 5,000 people on the regulatory affairs branch who are the enforcement branch, you know. And I just look at an organization like that and, you know, there's probably a lot of ex-industry people out there with very good skills that work in roles like that. But I've heard the conspiracy theory that maybe he's just buttering the wheels or helping things go through. But I personally don't buy it because I know those government agencies are so big. There's so many people involved, and it'd be difficult for me to really see that working for him for 10 years or whatever it is now, you know?
Well, I think that there's a conditioning that happens. And so people who grow up in the industry, grow up in a monocropped environment, educated maybe by a school that is partially funded by the industry, there's going to be a whole mindset that's what works for it. Just like we're taught this is a democracy and, you know, America represents a democracy and capitalism maybe represents a democracy. But we, in fact, never had a democracy. It's a republic. And it seems to be an awfully weighted republic. So it's all a perspective on that. Ken, do you want to weigh in on any of this?
I guess from like the pesticide standpoint, I just read something, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but that the FDA doesn't even do any testing on, like, I mean, for a good example would be BT corn. That's a registered pesticide. Like every cell in that plant makes BT, you know, Bacillus thuringiensis. Is it true that they don't require... They'll allow the, like, say, Monsanto, they have BT corn. Do they need to submit any of their findings to the FDA for them to approve it, or does the FDA just allow them to do what they wish? Because I read it, they let them do what they wish.
Do you guys know?
From what I understand in the regulatory process, the EPA handles the field trials of any traits, any crop protection traits, like insect resistant or herbicide resistant, because the EPA handles pesticides too. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those regulations and tests are similar. The USDA handles agronomic traits or input traits like, you know, yield or fungal resistance or some other things. Those are mandated by the USDA. More as far as field releases, which I deal with directly as the compliance manager for BSF, I handle all these trials out there. But then the FDA comes in before anything can be approved to go to market for human consumption.
The FDA approves all crops, all GMO crops, and actually GMO crops products are actually the most regulated of all through the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA. You know, I'd also like to add that, you know, it's not a happy day for us in the industry when the FDA or EPA or USDA comes to our sites. They are very strict on us. They hold us to the law. They do audits. They do checks. If we make any mistakes, we are fined. They can take our license to operate away from us. I definitely do not feel that we are in a good relationship with in that type of relationship that we've bought off the FDA or the EPA. It's not a fun day when they come to visit. It's a lot of work for us. They do a lot of audits. They do a lot of checking on what we're doing.
How often do they come?
You know, it'll depend. You know, back in the chemical industry, we had a couple of big audits. You know, few years, you know, a couple years apart. A lot of it's dependent on if they get complaints. You know, sometimes they have spot checks. It's not regularly. It's not predictable. It's on their schedule, not ours.
Well, the Hawaii Department of Ag also provides some regulatory oversight on these trials. And I can say they come and inspect 100% of my fields. And then the USDA, there's a few inspectors on the island too. I've never calculated the percentage. They're out there monthly, quarterly, you know, they're very familiar with all of our trials going on. Yeah. They're mandated more from their head office, when and what to go check. Definitely whenever there's a different trait that's here for the first time, and for multiple times after that.
Yeah, I guess the point I'm getting at, too, is like the FDA doesn't take any GMO seed, grow it out, and do their own independent testing, right? They get all the results from, say, Monsanto, and then call it good. That's the way I understand it.
I don't know their actual testing. I know we work with the I don't know which agency, to be honest. I thought it was the EPA, but it might be the FDA. I know that any regulated crop has to go through regulatory studies and feeding trials.
But is that science done within the company and then presented to the FDA, or is that actual independent studies done by a third party?
From what I understand, it's with third parties. It goes through like 100 independent studies of you know, non-biased data that they look at before approving or disapproving a trait to go onto the market. And this is over a process of like 12 years. I saw there's studies going on that the process is 12 years to bring a regulated trait to market, and the cost is now like $130 million.
Yeah. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, and in the studio here I have two people from Dow and BASF, and then another person formerly of Pioneer and now an organic farmer. So we're discussing about what's going on with the GMO industry, the biotech industry. And I want to like shift it a little bit towards like what we would be doing for solutions and how we would be changing it, because I'm just going to speak as a person who has for a year and a half, like whatever I'm doing on the air, I get so much more calls in the background. People talking about the cancers that they feel like they are experiencing, what's everywhere around. And nationally, it's gone up to almost 1 in 3 people get cancer. People have many kinds of different birth defects, different issues. And I respect that people are really in a lot of stress over what's going on. I know in my own families, plenty of illness happens. It's devastating to have all the death and disease that's going on, and long-term health issues. So I don't know that we can isolate it down to any one particular piece. Like I've been recently looking at the electromagnetic fields from all of our wireless and you know, all the internet, all the different things that are all around us. There's that. There's so many different layers of contaminants that happen. And so what happens is everybody gets duck and cover. Everybody can say, well, you can't prove that it's coming from us. It might be, and that nobody wants to think that they're doing it, right? Nobody wants to move the cell phone away from their head, by the way, too, or change their habits. Like I'm always one to be saying people should be growing their own food. That's definitely one place to start making this change. And it is an area where we need to go with it. But like, if we were to be looking forward, like what I asked you guys, my pitch was, is how can we change your business model? I used to have surf shops. So in retail, sometimes things go out of fashion. I would say genetically modified crops are out of fashion right now. There is worldwide anger at it, whether we could debate whether it's justified or not justified. Food will never go out of fashion, right? We're going to continue to need to have food. There's 7 billion people in the world right now. So where do we have dense calories? How do we go about doing this? And so I appreciated when I came to talk to you that you were actually, I felt genuinely interested in discussing soil. And I appreciate you coming to my place.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we want to use the best farm practices. I mean, we're in business. You are in business. You are in business. You know, we want to make a profit for our stakeholders, for our shareholders. That's true. Okay. But the way that you do that is use the best practices. You know, there are some great organic practices that we want to bring in. We're using summer fallows to help with our insect control. We're using cover crops for nitrogen fixation. We're trying to use the best practices that we can in our industry. And, you know, if I can make a comment about pesticide uses, because I know that's a really hot button and a big concern. You know, pesticides, again, they cost me money. We buy all of our pesticides locally through distributors. We don't get any pesticides directly from our parent companies. I don't even get a discount on our products that we buy through the local distributors. So applying a pesticide costs me money. It costs me the money for the product. It costs me money for the labor, the gas, and for the machinery. So we don't spray just for the heck of it. I mean, we spray when there's a need.
So tell me, how often do you spray?
Well, again, it's going to depend on the field, but we have people who scout the fields, and if they see a weed problem, they see an insect problem, we'll spray if we need to for that problem. You know, our hope is that when we see weeds, we spray a herbicide product once, it takes care of the weeds, and we don't have to spray it with a herbicide again. Once the corn gets to a certain height and it can shade out the weeds, then we have some weeds in the fields with our corn. We're not going to spray it again.
And I do want to verify that. I did see weeds in the field. They weren't huge weeds, but there definitely were weeds in the field.
That's probably the second growth, yeah. Same with insecticides. We're not going to spray an insecticide unless we see an insect population great enough in the field that's going to warrant spray. With insecticides, you know, I think my compatriots here will say, too, that you know, usually it takes more than one spray of an insecticide because you have to work on the life cycle of the insect. You know, but we really try to keep the number of sprays per field, you know, less than six, you know, around that neighborhood. I mean, we're not spraying a field every single day. We're not even spraying a field every single week if we don't have to.
So in the life cycle of a crop in the field, how many times is that particular field sprayed typically of something that ends with an IDE, like side?
Again, it depends on the crop. I didn't run the numbers. I don't have the average statistics,
five,
but I would say
ten.
Five, six.
Okay.
Under 10.
Under 10.
Under 10.
How about for you?
It's around, yeah, 10, 12, I think. We did some rough numbers on it. It's out there for 3 months. And it was a once a week kind of average, if you average it out like that. Most of the pesticides are designed to work, to provide protection from that insect for 5 to 7 days. So, we're not going to spray it any more than we need to for the cost reasons. And every time we take a sprayer through the field, there's also, you know, a risk of running over plants and stuff like that. And you have to get the workers out the whole time, you know, before and during that application. And then each pesticide might have what's called a reentry interval, of 12, 24, 48, even up to 72 hours before you can go back into that field to work. So we try to use the lightest ones. If an application needs to go on while we're working, we try to use something that's a little, you know, a weaker pesticide that will give us some control of the insect, but also allow us to get employees back in so we can do our hand labor.
And then so that's that, like, tractor with a boom sprayer. It's got a big bar across it, and the spray comes out. That's how. And so how many of those sprayers do you have in your fleet?
We have two.
How about you?
We have three.
Three,
yep.
And are they all working every day?
No. I hope they would be, but we have maintenance issues. But then we, again, use them as we need them. A lot of times with the sprayers, we want to... you know, one is dedicated to run herbicides, one's dedicated to run insecticide. Okay, so just from a cross contamination of the material, we run them that way. So they're used most every day, but not guaranteed that all three are running every single day. We also do a lot of hand weeding too. You know, if the weed population isn't that great or is spotty in certain areas, we'll go and hand weed and use other methods also.
Ken?
Yeah, I think just one thing that popped in my head was that if they don't want to, if, you know, GMO companies don't want to spray all the time, then why do they make seeds that require you to spray it for, you know, like Roundup Ready corn? You grow Roundup Ready corn or soybeans because you want to be able to spray your field with an herbicide that kills everything but your target plant. And you got to figure, I mean, again, I'm not attacking you guys or anything, but chemical, they're, all these seed companies are from chemical companies, so they don't want to use them because it costs them money, but they want to sell them to other people because they need to use them for their products.
No, that's a good question. I see why you would ask that. And back to something Peter was talking about earlier, when we're developing like a herbicide-resistant crop with Roundup resistance or whatever, we're making the hybrid seed here, and you've got to cross two parents. One of the parents has the trait, one of them doesn't. So out in that field, in a case like that, only half of the plants potentially would even have that herbicide resistance. So you can't treat with that herbicide. You have to use other, you know, things, because that would kill half of the plants out there, the ones that you're trying to cross onto anyway. So
yeah. And the ones that are glyphosate resistant, they're actually a one pass, and you can kill all the weeds in that field. The crops that we grow that are not glyphosate tolerant, we might have to spray two or three different herbicides to get all the different types of weeds, one for the grasses, one for the broadleaves, one for the vines. So with the tolerant, with the GMO seeds, we actually are spraying less herbicide than we would with the non-GMO seeds.
Mm-hmm. And then so when I hear, like, you can't go back into the field for 72 hours, of course that, as you would say, makes my spine tingle, because you guys saw my yard, right? And it's because I have polyculture in there. I have so many different types of things. We saw really one plant in at least 150, maybe 200 different types of plants that actually had any kind of bug problem. Would you say that's accurate?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and so when I've never used anything in 12 years on that property, it's because of the polyculture that it doesn't have that, you know. So it's like, how do we move agriculture towards something that is more natural? Because to think that you couldn't even go in that area for 72 hours, that's pretty gnarly.
Well, I mean, it is and it isn't. I mean, it's for worker protection. And, you know, some of the compounds, there are people that have allergic reactions to them. I mean, it's a dosage rate, and it's a sensitivity. Different people are sensitive at different rates. So, you know, we're ultra-conservative. So when we spray something like this, you know, we want to protect our workers, and we want to make sure we protect the ones that may be sensitive to it, so that they don't get anything onto them after we spray. The levels at which we spray it are very low, very non-toxic levels. Non-toxic to humans. So the what we call the restricted entry is basically just to further protect our workers and to take the risk even lower, that they don't get any type of exposure where they might have some adverse reaction to it.
Yeah, just like before I came here, I was reading through a really good book called The Fatal Harvest Reader by Andrew Kimbrell, and he's a big activist in the anti-GMO
yeah.
world. And I mean, it's just a book of facts, pretty much, you know. And he said that since GMOs debuted in like 1992 or so, that pesticide and herbicide use has been on the increase ever since. How do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, that's been said, and
and that's just like facts from like USDA, like how much is put down, because they do keep track of all that, so they have like the numbers on it.
Yeah, no, there's another guy, I can't remember his name, to put out a report like that as well. But this comes down to one of the overburdening bigger problems of the issue is, what do you believe? Who can you trust? Yeah, but facts from who? Because
the USDA?
Yeah, well, there's, for every, you know, claim like that, there's usually 100 from a consensus of scientists that are exactly contrary to it, you know, and all the facts that we look at show a clear decrease in pesticide use, total pesticide use. The one confusion that I've read into that topic was because glyphosate,
which is Roundup,
right, amount went up. Okay, so you could look at that and say, oh, glyphosate went up, but
glyphosate went way up.
All the other pesticides that were used prior to that,
herbicides,
went down, and the total tonnage that is actually going out is way less, and you know, you can look in that too. From well, you're a chemical engineer. Some of those aren't as toxic as other ones either.
Yeah, I worked in an insecticide facility, and I can tell you that when BT corn came out, our production, our sales dropped in half. I mean, they took a serious hit. So, you know, from the production side of it, I know the reduction we've had in sales of insecticides and in herbicides when the GMO crops came into existence. So I can't speak for the overall market, but I can speak for the ones that that I've had experience with.
Well, my instinct would be, you know, even when you say, what do you trust? I trust my instinct. And my instinct is, I don't want to be near something that's designed to kill something else. So, like, that's a piece. There's an instinctive piece there that's like, if that's, you know, causing something to wilt or to die, I prefer to, like, not have that right in my environment. And so do you guys have an index of soil quality? Do you guys keep records on that?
I've not heard of that. I don't know of it personally.
Okay. Do you?
No, we take regular soil samples for nutrient and pH and organic matter, like soil composition.
Soil composition, yeah. I was talking to, you know, some of the professors at UH, and they were saying, like, it's really important to be looking at the soil index to see if it's getting healthier, if it's getting degraded over time, is there more amendments that need to be going into it? That, you know, that's a really important indicator to be able to be looking at. And then the environmental impact studies, like, you know, who's paying for, where is it happening, how often is it happening? Those are, you know, really hot button issues. I know another one is the water, and I'm under the understanding that there's been water diversion up at the top of the hill. And do you know about that, Peter? Is there water diversion happening above Waimea for Dow?
Not that I'm aware of. Not that we're not that we're starting, or now that we're asking for. No.
Who manages your water? Where do you get your water?
We rent our land from Gay and Robinson, and they manage all the water for us. They supply the water to us.
So if somebody was unhappy with what was happening with the water diversions, Gay and Robinson is the ones to be speaking with?
I'm not sure if they're the right ones. You have to find out where it's happening at and who's doing it. But, I mean, for the water on our land, Gay and Robinson is providing us the water. But I'm not sure who you're referring to,
okay,
or who's doing this work.
And how about you with BASF? I just get calls, so I'm just kind of trying to really bring that forward. I haven't seen it, but I've understood that people in Waimea have said there's a fresh concrete awai going in above. That's one thing I had heard, so I'm just asking. And then Kirby, where do you get your water from?
We get ours from the Kekahai Ag Association, which is a co-op that formed from some of the seed companies and other farmers out on the west side, basically to manage the water assets and the plantation assets of the old Kekahai sugar plantation. So all those ditches in the Waimea Canyon bring the water down that the plantation put in that are aging 80, 100 years old, some of those trellises and ditch areas. So the co-op manages that for us. I think they're the huge operating budget a year just to keep that old ditch system alive and bring the water down to the plain. And then in addition to that, they have to maintain all the ditches of the Mana Plain, so to prevent flooding and whatnot from the case of a big rain event, that plain fills up with water, and all those, you know, Kekahai itself will kind of start backing up with water. So the co-op maintains all those ditches and opens them up if needed to drain them out to help, you know, prevent excessive flooding down there.
So when I was on the land, we were looking around at what was there, and it was my recommendation, you know, to begin with trying to use a little bit more permaculture practices in the swales. And you guys had suggested also the unutilized space in between your fields. You need 650 feet of distance between.
That is correct. I'll let Kirby talk about the science behind that.
Yeah, well, any of our, even before GMO crop breeding or whatever, just part of traditional plant breeding since the mid-20s requires you to isolate your fields from each other so that your different inbreds or hybrid types so that they don't cross-pollinate. It's just all about seed purity. So there is a lot of open land at different seasons that is kind of what we call just border land or whatnot. So that's something that we've put into conservation at BSF, and I think Peter's done a lot of that too.
Yeah, we have the same thing. You know, we have to maintain that isolation for our fields. We also have some land that we have that has a large slope to it that we don't want to farm, or we can't farm with the equipment that we have. So yeah, we do have a lot of area that we use for isolation, but that's also available to do some other things with. And we're running a number of projects to see what we can do with that. With that land that we have, that isolation land. And I would love to start bringing in some various ideas and into that land and bringing some of the soil remediation thoughts and ideas into it. Very interested in doing that.
What we were looking at today for the listener is just like in a permaculture style, how we do bioremediation and how, you know, you can use nature to heal the land. And, we looked at the food forest up there. We looked at, like, how cardboard could be placed down to repress weeds. And it actually is really good for keeping water on the place. There's a lot of different things. And so I was happy, Peter, that you were suggesting that you have an interest in facilitating that.
Absolutely.
And the area that you had brought forward as a possible suggestion to begin with, is that near Kamakani School?
Our main offices, our farm is right in the middle of, or right around Kamakani. So yeah, we have some land there that, we would love to do some trials on and would like, you know, could open up, land that we won't, farm due to slope or proximity to schools or churches or the neighbor or the villages. Yeah.
So what that suggestion is that I was putting forward is really going pretty heavy in a permaculture style of really revitalizing that land, and then with the hope, and then you were kind of suggesting doing some test fields that are actually with an organic structure. I mean, how likely is that something that could happen?
Yeah, it's something that, if it works out, if it works in the trial area, definitely we'll bring it in. We're a technology company. We're all technology companies. We want to use the best technology that's available. And if we get it going out there and if it's working for us, you bet we're going to use that in other areas. We're going to use that in production, yeah.
Like nature. Nature has got is a good technologist. That's what we're finding.
We're using nature all the time right now already. So we'd love to continue to use it more. And, the thing that I've heard from some concerned citizens is, that we're hurting the land. That we don't care about the land.
Mm-hmm. That's a concern.
And I understand that concern, but that's one of those things that puts the tingle up my spine, okay? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the land is where we're getting our livelihood also, okay? People may not like the way that we're making the livelihood off the land, but the land is our livelihood. That is our business. That is, you know, our careers, our professions. And we take our careers and our professions very seriously. And the last thing we would want to do as farmers is hurt the land. Now, again, we may have to agree to disagree on what is the best way to care for the land, but we do want to care for the land. We want that land to be productive. We want that land to be healthy. We want to get the greatest production we can out of that land. That's what we're about.
Gary Hooser has a bill that he's putting forward, or I don't know if bill's the right word. He wants to put something before the county council called Right to Know, where there is a disclosure of which chemicals are used and when they're used, and that seems, you know, that's a simple thing, kind of like labeling. I understand where labeling is a national issue, and that's where there is kind of credibility loss with the industry. If it was great for you, people would say, hey, yay, you know, GMO inside. With the Right to Know legislation that he would like to put forward at the county level, how do you feel about that? What's the reason to not say this is what we're spraying and when we're spraying it? Why would we avoid something as simple as that basic disclosure? Many people feel like that's a baby step. It's not, you know, near or far enough. But in that particular thing that's being put forward, how do you feel about that one?
We are very regulated by the state and the pesticides that we use. We keep logs. We keep, 90-day logs of what we spray. We get audited on the chemicals that we use. We get audited to make sure that we use them in the correct dosage on the field, that we don't over-apply, that we don't under-apply. The data is out there, and Gary Hoosier has received the data on the pesticides that we use and how much we use.
Because he paid for it, right?
Yeah, you do have to. I mean, it is part of the public access, and he was charged the fees to recover that for the state taking those numbers out. But that information is available. The making it known, as we're doing it, is just very logistically problematic. How we make decisions, day by day on what we need to spray based on the needs that we have. Like I told you before, we just don't spray every day just for the heck of it. We spray as we need it. I haven't seen the bill. I'm not sure of the bill, but for us, it'd be very problematic. And how do we implement that bill? How do we get that information across when, we're making decisions on a day by day basis?
I guess my take on this would be that would kind of be an antidotal response to basically our failure in letting the community know, and educating them of what our practices are. Everybody's scared of what we're doing, and this is anecdotal.
Terribly scared.
And that would be antidotal to that fear. And I get that.
I don't understand anecdotal to that fear.
It would
fear.
Be like...
Meaning, if you told us, you think it would make us more scared, or you think it would calm us?
I think that it would calm you.
Okay, I would think so, too.
I think that I would much rather see more efforts and resources going into dialogue with the community and pesticide handling, usage, training, whatnot, than passing laws about it. I would like to revamp some of those efforts first before doing that.
One of the things that people have to understand, too, is the majority of the products that we use are the same products that you can buy at the hardware store, at the home improvement stores. There are some products that are called restricted-use pesticides, okay, that you need to have a license to apply. Similar to prescription drugs. There's some drugs that you have to have a doctor prescribe to you and some that you can buy over the counter, okay? The non-registered ones are over the counter, and that's primarily what we use on our fields, the same products that you can buy. The registered ones are newer products that maybe hasn't been around as long. They want to guarantee that the correct dosages are being used. So they're only allowing people who have licenses to go use that so they can monitor that use and also monitor that they're using it correctly for the right crops in the right dosages.
And we've talked about that a lot here, and what I would basically be saying on this point is that people want to know, and they want to know not only what you guys are using, but what the state's using and what the county's using, and we want to actually really be looking at it. There's been lots of baby miscarriages. There's been a whole lot of challenges that are happening, and so, it's more than you guys. It's like we need to be conscious. Do we have...
Yep.
Okay, who's on the air?
Hooser.
Okay, we'll go ahead and take him. And pretty soon we're going to be opening up the phone lines. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Gary Hoosier.
Hi, Gary.
Is this Felicia?
It is, and you are on the air.
Okay, well, great. I've been listening to your show, and thank you very much for doing that. And I heard my name mentioned, so I figured I'd give a call.
Okay, I was talking about your right to know, and I was saying, why not just say what people are using? And I was actually more than just these restricted-use chemicals. I think if somebody's got 4,000 acres or 10,000 acres or whatever, or the state or the county, you guys should all be saying what you're using.
Right, and that was a big disappointment for me was, as a council member, when I asked the four companies, just the basic question, what are you spraying every year and how much are you spraying? They wouldn't tell me. And I was disappointed that they wouldn't tell me that. And I did go to the Department of Agriculture and get a list of the restricted uses pesticides, but I still have not gotten the general use pesticides. Did I lose you?
No, we're listening.
Okay. And the restricted use, that's the really, really strong bad stuff, and there's tons of it being sprayed or being applied on Kauai every year. And some of these chemicals, like atrazine or paraquat-based chemicals, are banned in the European Union. Some are banned in other states. And I think for the community to make any intelligent decisions, we need to at least know what's going on. And so, I would ask the gentleman there why they are unwilling to provide that basic information to the community.
Well, Gary, this is Peter, and we've actually talked about this, and I still encourage you and welcome you to come out to the farm at any time so that we can talk story. You asked us through a letter, and that's a very formal process to go through, with that formal process, we're going to have a very formal response that goes through our corporation. And we gave you the information. We gave you how to get the information, what was the legal and the proper way, and that's by going through the USDA. I tingle goes up my spine. It was never my intention not to provide you that information. I encourage you to come out to the farm. I'll come to your office. Let me know when. And we can talk about this, and I'll be more than happy to show and share with you what we're doing.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Peter. And I understand perfectly well that you have bosses, and people in corporate that control basically what's going on. And I put the question in writing because I wanted an official response to an official question. And I still have not gotten the answer in terms of the glyphosates and the other general use pesticides. I know the restricted uses, but I don't know the other. And I feel good that, you're a good person and would try to help me as much as you can, but I'm an official of the county of Kauai, and so I'm trying to get official information, and it's troubling when I can't get it.
Then unfortunately, I have to, I also then have to give an official response from my side too, I really appreciate Felicia having us on the show because, this gives us a chance to talk and to share, and hopefully gets us beyond the official and maybe gets us more into the just having an open dialogue and understanding where we're coming from and what the concerns are and how we can work together to inform and to safeguard our community.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that we need to have a good dialogue, but I believe it has to start with facts. Facts that we both are comfortable knowing that are true. I'm about half the land leased by the seed companies in general is public lands. These are state lands. And I'm concerned about not about the science of genetic modification as much as I am about the impact of the industry on our island. Without exaggeration, there are tons of restricted use pesticides and probably tens of tons of general use that are put out every year on our island, and they must have impacts, but we don't know what those impacts are because we don't have the information. And so that's my goal, is to just get the information to the public so we can analyze the impacts and then make rational decisions. It's a tough one.
It is. Well, let's continue to talk and let's continue to let's work together to try to get that done.
Okay. Thanks so much, Peter. And Kirby, nice talking with you also.
Thank you, Gary. Bet. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, and now K284 AL Haleiwa. Aloha Oahu. Okay, we've got other callers. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. And we're going to go through these quick, so you'll make your main point,
well,
and then we're going to get the next call.
It's very difficult because these guests of yours have left us with so many questions. They're very good at going around the edges, but like he didn't come right back and give Gary Hooser what Gary wanted. He just danced around it. So it's going to be difficult. So having said that, Syngenta is a Swiss company. Syngenta makes atrazine. They're using it here. Atrazine is prohibited in Switzerland, where Syngenta is from. They are not doing this blindly. They are not acting to forbid the use of atrazine in Switzerland blindly. There is a reason why atrazine is forbidden to be used in the country of the company that makes it. Yet we get to have the blessing of atrazine being applied here on this island. And then just the other night, Sunday night, I saw a lengthy article on Bill Moyers on public television about lead and the lead industry and how the lead industry acted the exact same way as the tobacco companies in saying that lead not only wasn't bad for us, lead was good for us. And they stonewalled and they stonewalled and they stonewalled until it was so overwhelmingly obvious that they had been lying to us about the safety of lead and what it was doing to our children. That lead, first they took tetraethyl lead out of gasoline and then they took it out of paint. The criminal actions of these companies has yet to go punished. So now you're telling us that you're spraying herbicides and pesticides and you're doing it legally according to directions. Yet I'll give you one example. I lived on the North Shore for 10 years and they were spraying Roundup alongside the road down on Kalihiwai Hill, the highway going down towards Kalihiwai Bridge. They were spraying Roundup on the weeds that grow there quickly beyond belief. Now, Roundup is supposed to be a systemic pesticide. It's only supposed to affect the plants onto which leaves you spray them on. And then from the leaves it goes into the roots and it kills only the plants that you spray them on. Yet, in the years that I lived on the North Shore, the albizia trees where the weeds were growing were dying all up and down the highway. Then, this went on for years, then somebody said, hey, we've got a spring on the side of this highway that we've been using for drinking water for centuries.
Caller, bring it fast, because
yes,
I got all
it.
These people lined up. So
but,
really quick.
But they
1 minute,
stopped
max.
Spraying, because of the spring, they stopped spraying the Roundup, and the albizia trees stopped dying.
Yes.
They came back. So you're telling me, you're trying to tell me that your chemicals are safe because it's been approved by certain government agencies, and I know that you are lying. I absolutely know it because I've seen it with my own eyes. So you can sing and you can dance all you want, but I don't believe you.
Okay.
A heck of a lot of people on Kauai don't believe you.
Thank you.
And Gary Hooser probably doesn't believe you. And would you please give him what he's asking for and stop singing and dancing around?
Thank you. Thank you so much. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha.
Hey, Fern, how you doing?
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. So
thanks for taking my call.
3 or 4 minutes?
Yeah, so a couple of things. First of all, regulation. Nice to talk to you guys again, too, by the way. Hi, Peter, and hi, Kirby.
How you doing?
I just wanted to let you guys know that I find it you know, you got to look a little bit more into this EPA thing and the lack of regulation that your corporations actually have, because there's loopholes that have been granted under pesticide laws that have allowed for you guys to basically approve products under conditional registration, which means that they don't have to go through these year-long tests that you're kind of describing and making out like they do. And in fact, a lot of these chemicals, and particularly pesticides, have been put on the market before they're properly tested, and specifically before any environmental or ecological impacts are known, and that is particularly the clause that they are allowed to be cut out of. And because of those conditional registration exemptions, a lot of the chemicals, like the neonicotinoids, which were just banned throughout Europe and Russia is threatening to go to Third World War over, are highly toxic, untested pesticides, really untested for their environmental impacts, and that's why we're only starting to see those now. And I also would like to echo the last caller who mentioned the lack of, you know, the long time it takes for your products to show their impacts, you know, like PCBs. And Peter, you work for Dow. Dow was one of the larger manufacturers of Agent Orange for the Vietnam War, and which killed, you know, and maimed well over 500,000 people and is in a third generation of mutations at the moment. Agent Orange was tested here on Kauai, along with your other, you know, toxic products that you guys probably even test today. And I encourage you to also, you know, you talk about dialogue, so I'd like to bring that up, open dialogue. Well, why don't you start releasing these 90-day records that you say, these 90-day logs of pesticide use, why don't you start releasing to the public what kind of GMO traits are being tested on our island? Is there BT corn being grown on our agricultural fields? Is, and, you know, the whole thing about reducing pesticides, I mean, you guys are real careful with your words, but come on. All the evidence and all the data, including the government bodies that was already pointed out to you by Ken in the studio, is done. You know, it's not accurate. It's what you guys are being told. You know, you're reducing pesticides. Why? Because insecticides slightly reduced over an 8-year period when herbicides tripled, and now we are at record spraying levels. We've increased spraying by millions of tons a year, and you're talking a slight decrease in insecticides. But why? Because the new crops that are labeled the genetically modified pesticide producing crops are pesticides. These crops make pesticides in every cell of their body. So when they're breaking, or in their, you know, plant body, and when they break down into the environment like any other natural living thing, they're cycling through our ecosystem. So when are these genes actually being able to be contained? And so, you know, those sort of things with your pesticide, your lack of clarity and your definitions of what pesticides are and what experiments are, aren't really enough to keep us too confused, because we really would like to have that open dialogue where you tell us what is going on, so we aren't sitting around so confused. How many tons of what pesticides are being sprayed, when and where, and what genetically modified test crops are being conducted on our fields?
Okay.
You say there's no experiments.
Thank you.
What's going on?
Thank you for bringing forward all of those concerns. I've got stacks of calls.
Awesome. Thanks, Lisa.
I'm
going
to bring them forward, and then we can try and address them.
Call back, buddy.
Aloha, you're on the air. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Another question, comment. Felicia, you mentioned soil profiles. There are two other types of indicators in the soil other than amendments and lack of amendments. The diversity of soil organisms is probably the main indicator of healthy soil. Diversity of soil organisms, and the other one is organic matter. How much organic matter is in there? Well,
we looked at that pretty closely today.
Excuse me?
We actually had a really, really close examination and discussion on exactly that.
Okay, well, I came in late into the show, but I just want to mention that pesticide and herbicide use, along with chemical fertilizers, are known to kill microorganisms, and that's one of the things that is actually killing our soil.
Yes, we discussed that when we were in the organic environments here. We kind of actually had a robust discussion on that. And what I want to compliment these guys on is that they are willing to do a field trip of key people and leaders from the concerned communities to go through and actually look, and like for us to be able to work together on it in a much more robust discussion than just the radio. Thank you.
Right. Actually, to add to that comment, I think that, yeah, very much so. The more heads that get together,
in more diverse opinions, the better. Only good can come out of that. If it's all a one-sided discussion amongst certain specialty groups, that's going to lead to disaster sooner or later. So
right.
We need to actually open up the dialogue into the entire community so that all these amazing heads here on Kauai can get together and really figure it out.
Right. And then when we're looking at people for coming in, it's people who have the most strident concerns and who are well-informed and then going larger and larger. Like, we actually were really giving quite a bit of dialogue in our background conversation about how do we shift the direction, how do we do some shifting of the whole business model. And it doesn't happen in 2 hours, but hopefully it can happen very quickly. Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. So I'm wondering, why must you use pesticides? Why can you not employ people to pick the weeds with their hands? Why must you poison it?
Thank you.
Again, we actually use both techniques. We do use hand weeding. Hand weeding is effective for larger weeds like castor beans. We also use mechanical cultivation, where we cultivate with machines, going between the rows of corn to help fight weed problems. So we basically use all means that we have before us. But there are some times that it would be too labor intensive just not practical at all to do hand labor to weed, and that's when we use herbicides.
But you realize why that is, right? You have a commercial farm, so you're trying to make money, so you own thousands of acres. So of course it would be hard to get people to pick things, but if you split it up into independent farms who aren't so concerned with the bottom line, or more concerned with the quality of the food, then they would happily pick the weeds and your farm would work just fine. You wouldn't need to use mechanical harvesting because people could harvest it. It can be cared for by the people. If it's in a smaller dose, it's not just about making money.
Yeah, and we actually had a pretty robust discussion on that, too, and how there's a whole emerging culture that is like a culture of the past when food isn't a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and we were definitely looking at that, and then also acknowledging the challenge that we have when we have all these big buildings and people in urban settings that there's huge consumption of food. So there's this balance that we have to be able to figure it out. And I'm not saying that we need chemicals for it or not, but that's what we're looking at. So thank you so much for bringing up those issues.
Nope. Actually, one more question, if that's okay.
And really fast, because I've got every line hooked up.
I was wondering if you can tell us what kind of genes that you're putting. I know that we would like labels of if it has GMO or not, but I think that we are entitled to what the proteins are telling our DNA to do.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
you can try and answer that.
Some of the traits that we're working on at BSF is for enhanced yield in the plants, and then also enhanced oil in our soybean and canola plants, but mostly yield, and then some of it is for fungal resistance, kind of to make the plant disease resistant so it can withstand environmental pressures in different areas.
But doesn't that assimilate with our DNA when we consume it?
No.
I mean, and that's where we have, and we had a pretty robust discussion on this. Like, there's certain camps, and I'm in that camp, that doesn't trust maybe the science that's put forward that they've learned. And I have to admit that I'm a lay person. I'm not an industry person, but that is definitely an issue. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you so much.
Aloha, thank you for holding.
Aloha, Felicia. This is Christy.
And
aloha to Peter and Kirby, and I just want to say thank you. Can you hear me?
Aloha,
yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. I have a couple questions. First, I'd like to know about the global ag labor that you that is down in Waimea now, and I want to know if you are using that company, and where are you bringing your workers in from, and why are you not hiring local people?
We use Global Ag, and we do use local people. We use a lot of local people. The majority of the folks, we want all the folks to come from the west side. We have brought some workers in from Washington State when we could not find enough people on the west side to work. At our maximum, we probably have, 80 workers from Global Ag. That's a lot of workers to bring in.
Are they from America or are they from other countries?
They're from America. I mean, from the only people that we brought in from outside of Hawaii have come from Washington State.
Yeah, and we have these seasons where we really got to peak up. Like the fall is a big planting season for us. When all the breeding stations harvest their corn in the Midwest and send their seed here for increase over the winter, we have probably the biggest cycle of the year, and that's where we got to staff up with more people. And with the unemployment rate at, like, you know, pretty low on the west side, I don't know what it is. Is it 4 again?
I hear it's under 4% now.
But it's a matter of there not being enough people. So Global Ag sources these people in from elsewhere.
Do you have another question?
And they come in and then they leave? You bring them in temporarily and then they leave the island?
The ones from Washington State, yes. But the ones from Kauai, you know, obviously stay here.
We've been hearing about people from Mexico and Asia and I think even South America.
Colombia.
Colombia.
I know Colombia is being brought in here.
So Global Ag has sourced from some international areas a few years ago, maybe even 2 years ago. But that's if the local source is tapped out.
I mean, I can speak for, you know, I've been here for a little over a year, and to the best of my knowledge, we have not brought anybody in from any other country for our farm. We have some people who have, you know, Filipino heritage. We have some people who have immigrated to Kauai. But the workers that we have brought in are Kauai residents, and at our peak times, we've brought some people in from Washington State, and, you know, they're American residents.
Is there another company besides Global Ag that does bring in the people from other countries?
Not that I'm aware of, not that I work with.
Not at your place?
Not at my, not with Dow AgroScience.
Okay, Chrissy, do you have another question?
Yes, I do. One more question. So my next question is, I drive to the west side a lot. I do live on the North Shore, but I am on the west side a lot, and I want to know if I'm welcome to show up there and find out more about your business practices.
Absolutely. We welcome you gladly. We'd love to show you around.
And we're going to do a big field trip.
Okay.
We're going to be a bunch of activists going down there, and we'll be nice, and we'll scare them.
Just
but
please
we'll
don't bring picket signs.
And are we going to get to find out exactly all the things that are being grown here?
I'll do my darn best.
I will say, I do want to say this, that when I did go down there, you guys were pretty good. It was comfortable. I mean, I wish you'd told me to wear better shoes next time.
Sorry about
that. I'm going to be wearing the shoes because I want to go everywhere. But, they are open and, you know, letting a number of us come in that are all opposed. And then, you know, we can go bigger after that. You know, we can come up with some different ideas.
You know, I guess I want to say, you know, we're running a business, you know, and you know, you don't go into, I don't think you want to go into, you know, a grocery store and ask them, you know, exactly how many, you know, cases of salad dressing they go through, or how many cases of beer that they buy, or stuff like this. I mean, you know, we are running a business, and we do want to make sure that we don't lose.
But you're running a business on a small island that has a very fragile ecosystem, and people live here, so we're concerned.
And we will, and I'd love to bring you out, and I will answer all of your questions that are concerning your concerns about the environment and what we're doing.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. And I'll take this off the air now. Like, having had a business before, if I ever had a constituent group that's out in the community that had this much animosity, I would show my laundry. You know, like, it's one thing if somebody's asking because they want to be the competitor again across the street. It's another if they want to burn your store down, right? So I'm kind of maybe being extreme, but like,
No, I think you'll see more transparency from us.
Yeah.
Coming
forward, mean, because so. I'm hearing that so profoundly that people, they're not into it. Being held back because, and even like Jerry, I totally love Jerry O'Nellis. He makes a comparison that says, about a liquor store selling beer and cigarettes. Well, you know what? It doesn't hurt me if somebody's drinking that beer or doing that cigarettes. If they were putting it in my baby's bottle, well, then I really gotta know. So there's a different element on that. Okay, we're gonna take some more calls, and at 5:30 I have some underwriters I have to acknowledge. Thank you for holding. Hello? Oops, there you go. Thank you for holding.
Aloha.
Hi.
Thank you for the show. It's great. Timely and everything. I have a question. Just this past week or so, the USDA has refused approval on new pesticides for both Dow and Monsanto. And in their statement, they said the USDA needs to conduct more detailed studies before approving the seeds, because they, quote, may significantly affect the quality of human environment. Yes. And they were speaking of 2,4-D and dicamba and a couple of others. There were a lot of conversations about approvals and what's been approved for other crops and pesticides. But here on Kauai, we are a test site. So we're using things that are not approved yet. And I'd like to have them address the distinction between what has been approved and what is being used here on Kauai that has not been approved, because we're a test site.
I'll address that. And we're not working with any unapproved material here. Everything here has already been approved for release to the field environment. It's been, through years of tests and regulation, if it's a GMO trait in a greenhouse and lab environment before it was even put forth, before dossier was put forth to USDA for a field release. It has to, you know, go through certain tests and meet conditions to those guys before it can even come here. And the USDA, EPA will regulate that, and then also the Hawaii Department of Ag has the final say on that. And can invoke extra conditions if they find that plant to be, you know, more concerning to Kauai or whatever. I've dealt with a couple different crops that went through this process, and they do pretty thorough, I thought.
Yeah, we're not a test site. We're a manufacturing site. We grow more seed. We produce seed corn. You are correct. Dow AgroSciences has a new product that it's called Enlist. And the EPA does want to do more studies with it, and we're glad to do those studies. We're glad to make sure that that our product is safe. And this is why, I kind of internally chuckle when I hear, you know, some folks thinking that we've got the FDA or EPA, wrapped around our fingers. We don't. If we did, we wouldn't have to go and do some more studies. But I think the EPA in this case asked for that, and we'll gladly do that.
Can I add something in there, though? I mean, I signed one of the petitions asking for that, and I think there was something like 400,000 people signed that petition. So there was coercion on the FDA or the EPA from the miscellaneous people. Like, it's really getting motivated. Doesn't mean they wouldn't have done it anyway, but I'm sure that there was something persuasive in, you know, citizen activism on that one.
Either way, we're happy to do the tests, mm-hmm. and we'll do the tests.
So I seem to be hearing a mixed message about whether we're doing the tests or not doing the tests, or if we're calling them studies.
I'm sorry. The company will do the tests on the mainland as prescribed by the EPA.
Okay.
We're not doing those tests on Kauai. Kauai is not a test facility. Those tests are usually done in an academia setting. They're usually done by a university. For us, you know, we do pay for those studies, but they're done in accordance to how the EPA wants to have them done, and the data is returned to the EPA.
Are those for commercial release, this product?
Yeah, that's for commercial release. It has been approved in some countries. It has been approved in some crops. I'm not totally versed on this, but yeah, this is for commercial release.
I did just get a text from the county here, though. Pioneer and Syngenta both have pesticide experimental use permits, where both of you do not. So well, they might be responding differently.
The article I'm looking at refers to seeds in question are engineered to withstand 2,4-D, which I believe we're using here or are being used here. And I heard you earlier say that the 2,4-D is being used in what I'm understanding is the problem of superweeds, which is other stuff becoming resistant to Roundup kind of stuff. So I heard you say earlier that you only spray when you go through the fields and see if there are weeds necessary. Are the weeds showing up? So it would seem to sound like that you spray and test to see how much spray is required without knowing when you're going in. Is that accurate?
No, that's not accurate. When we see weeds, we'll pick a product that we think can best control those weeds. That product is registered, and on the registration it actually tells us the dosage rate, the appropriate dosage rate for that crop. What we should be using as far as, you know, grams per acre or ounces per acre, and that's what we apply.
And then if you go through 2 weeks later and the weeds are back, then you do it again.
Then I look for a better product.
Right.
How long has 2,4-D been on the market as a herbicide?
It's one of the oldest herbicides. It's been around, I would say, over 40 years.
And that is in Agent Orange, though, right?
No,
right.
It's not. No, that's 2,4-T, I believe. This is 2,4-D.
2,4-D was in Agent Orange.
I could have been one of the components of it, but it wasn't.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of stories in the media that do say 2,4-D is a component of Agent Orange. It's that's been said in many ways. We are at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. Caller, can you sum up pretty quickly, because I have some underwriters that I really want to thank.
Okay. Yeah, no, those were the questions I had. I very much appreciate them being on the show and you hosting it, Felicia. Thank you very much. And I guess the last comment, I listened carefully to the answers, and I heard a lot of answers like, well, we primarily, or the majority of what we do, but it left a huge windows of questions in those kinds of answers about what is not primarily and what is not the majority. So I would love to hear some more clarity.
Okay.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Thank
that.
You.
Thank you.
And then just for, because I'm getting all these texts on here too, it's me who's also trying to get the calls to be addressed as quickly as possible. So on some of these that didn't get fully answered, that's me, not them. Then what I'm going to do, I'm going to bring forward our underwriters, because we so appreciate them. I've got two calls holding, and then I've got a handful of them stacked up here that I'm going to read out on my computer. But Kauai Soapbox Live is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Coffee Company, Al Pastor, and then Miss Saigon.
Kauai Coffee, 100% pure Hawaiian, single-origin, GMO-free coffee. Grown and roasted here on the Garden Island, at retail locations island-wide on all the Hawaiian Islands, and at our estate on Highway 540 between Kalaheo and Ali'ali, where walking tours and coffee tasting are also available. More information and ordering online at kauaicoffee.com.
Al Pastor Tacos supports KKCR across the street from the craft fair in Kapa'a by the beach. Al Pastor Tacos serves fresh grilled local fish, steak, chicken, and pork tacos and burritos in the Al Pastor style. Also a garden salad and choices for the kids. Open every day from 11 to 4. Takeout orders welcome. Al Pastor Tacos, authentic Mexican food. 652-6953.
From the creators of Les Mis, the hit musical Miss Saigon will debut on May 17th and 18th and May 24th and 25th at the KCC Performing Arts Center. All shows start at 7 p.m. That's Miss Saigon, May 17th and 18th, and 24th and 25th at the KCC Performing Arts Center. More information and tickets online at MissSaigonKauai.com or at 652-5210.
Haleakala Solar is opening an office on Kauai in the Kukui Grove Mall by the food court. Grand opening Saturday and Sunday, June 1st and 2nd. Operating in Hawaii for 36 years with offices on Maui and Oahu. Full service installers of photovoltaic and solar hot water systems, including solar pool panels and battery systems new to Kauai. Financing available. That's Haleakala Solar's Kauai office grand opening, June 1st and 2nd at Kukui Grove Mall. More information online at haleakalasolar.com.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Eric, can you bring forward a question that was asked?
Yeah, so we're having some friends call in and come into the show, and their big concern is the bees, and pretty much asking, are you guys concerned about the bees and the well-being of them on this island?
Oh, absolutely, Eric, and yeah, I've been spending a bit of time talking with Jimmy Trujillo, and well, he's the one that first got us out to talk at the bee panel at KCC on Earth Day, and that Felicia moderated. But no, we're concerned about the bees as much as everyone. We're agriculturalists. We know biology. We know how important they are to the world. We know that obviously our pesticides.
Yeah.
Could be a factor with the worldwide bee problem. There is a lot of concern with that. And we have some great dialogue going with Jimmy. And I went Saturday night and met with him and the Beekeepers Association even, and kind of opened up a little bit.
Saturday night on
some of our practices. Yeah, it was during Miss Saigon right there at KCC.
So you are definitely putting your energy into the bees.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and then so I got stacked callers, and I've got a bunch on my text, so I'm just going to start taking them.
Go down the line. Here we go.
Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to commend these gentlemen for being brave and coming on the air and sitting in the hot seat.
They sure are brave.
And, you know, I appreciate all the good things of being said, but I just can't help but feeling, you know, deep down, I mean, these companies, they create poisons, you know? I mean, it's death and destruction. It's like, I know that you guys are just doing, you know, you've chosen this career path, and you're probably good people, and you're just doing what you need to do to get by and make a living. But, I mean, I hope you really look in your hearts and think about what you're doing here in the big picture, because these companies are just, they're not good. They're not, I mean, they might make a few good things here and there, but overall, I think the weighs on the bad side. And so just... That's all I have to say.
Hey, short and to the point.
Thank you.
Caller.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
I would like to ask if any of the gentlemen are aware of the timetable the industry, the chemical industry, announced on participating in research on the effects of multiple pesticide exposure because of the collapse of so many beehives. The industry has agreed that they don't know what happens when their different companies' chemicals are interacting. So they were going to participate with government on research on that. It's just what is the effect of these different chemicals over time when they're put together, even though they're from different companies. And I'd like to know if we know anything about when those tests are taking place and if the industry has formed some kind of committee to do that yet, because that's really what's happening to all of us.
I don't know the answer to that. I was actually just informed today pleasantly of the industry's commitment to do that from Jimmy. So...
I'm looking. Well, that doesn't surprise me. Corporations, I know how it works. I've worked a lot.
I think it's great news, and looking forward to that. Occurring.
It may answer a lot of everybody's questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to take one more call, and then I'm going to read a bunch of these things. Okay, bring it up. Thank you for holding.
Hello?
Okay, let's go quick.
Hi. Okay, so if we think DNA is information for our cells, tells our cells what to do, so the fact that they're taking DNA and then inserting it into a virus and then infecting food and then spraying it with pesticide and then processing it in some cases like soybean and then selling it to consumers to eat, to me that doesn't equate to feeding the world or helping us. So can you please explain to me how these methods are better than conventional farming with organic only?
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm taking that one off the air, but go ahead really quick. Like that, yeah. That call goes to the very core question where we're really in
the
philosophical
safety.
Disagreement, right? Like many of us just go, I'd rather eat something that isn't genetically modified.
Right, and I'm trying to remember the question.
Well, it's pretty much why GMOs.
Why GMOs?
Okay.
That it's not healthy. That I think when there's the genetic change... That
okay.
speaks to people's instinctual concern.
Well, first of all, GMOs is just one of the breeding tools that we use for crop improvement. Most of the crops, most of the main
crops. Okay, they don't want to know about the other ones. They want to know why DNA. Why the genetics? Like, I understand that you do other things. I'm just trying
right.
to go quick because I'm
sure.
just overwhelmed with how many people are trying to get
it's
through.
It's all because we can more precisely insert the trait that we want. Into another plant species more precisely and quicker than we can through traditional breeding methods.
Okay, and I would say that I'm speculating here, but maybe for that caller that doesn't feel comfortable, right?
Right.
I mean, it's kind of like that's sort of the core issues. I'm going to read a few of these out because I've got actually really strong people coming in here. Oh my God, I have so many. Sorry, let me try and look through these really quick. I'm having one saying, this is all experimental. There are only 9 approved crops. Kirby already said they are growing sunflower and rice. Neither of those are approved. They are undergoing that approval, meaning experimental. To her, that was meaning experimental. I actually have got a plethora of people and different people trying to ask me, says, get Peter to admit that 2 RD-resistant traits are being grown here. Is that true?
I'm sorry, 2,4-D?
It says that 2 R-D-resistant traits are being grown here. Maybe it's supposed to be 2. Yeah, R is just before 4. 2,4-D-resistant traits are being grown here.
I'm the site leader. I'm trying to go back and remember the crops. And I'm sorry, I'm a chemical engineer and I'm not an agronomist. I know that we grow BT corn here. I know that we have Roundup Ready corn. But I'm sorry, I'll have to get you that information.
Okay.
I'm just not aware of all the crops.
And we'll
here.
Be going into these things in the future at some point. I have another person saying, I believe all companies are conducting research on Kauai that involve organisms not approved for release into the open environment, nor approved for human consumption. One company has already told me yes in writing. The other 3 have evaded my question. Again, that one is coming from a government official. There's another one here. It says, so are they doing research or growing on the N-list corn or soy here? N-list corn, N-list corn is resistant to 2,4-D and dicamba. Is that being grown here?
I don't have it. I'll have to get that information.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to not be honest, but I don't want to give a dishonest answer either. I just don't have that knowledge. Again, I'll need to talk to my agronomist.
Well,
I can answer a question about some of those quickly. There are some crops that are here that are approved for field release, but they are not yet approved for human consumption. That's part of the whole regulatory process. Remember, you know, going back to the 12 years, it has to be, you know, while they're doing food safety tests on it on the mainland, they still allow the breeding to go on because the safety testing goes on for a long time. So in the meantime, if it is approved for field release, that can continue. Then that all has to occur before approval for human consumption.
And as I'm watching my cell phone here just have a breakdown on texts, what to me is really clear is that all these fine details mean a whole lot to the people outside the industry. And it might be that whether it's becoming desensitized to what people feel is a very serious issue because it becomes normal business practice, like maybe an oncologist deals with cancer issues really easily and it's just fluid, where somebody who's being diagnosed is a very, very serious issue and it's not cavalier. I'm not accusing you guys of being cavalier. People are putting a lot of energy into trying to research, trying to understand. I don't think people want something to fear for entertainment. Most of us have a whole lot better things to do than panic over a cell tower going across the street from our house. That's me. And I think it's a reasonable panic. That, you know, people are worried. People are really worried. So I'm really glad that you guys are in here and listening and talking. And I know that this isn't comfortable for you guys, but I'm looking at you and I see the care in your faces, that this isn't, you're not being cavalier. This is stuff that you're very comfortable with and you know, but we'll be working on it. I appreciate that you're here. I'm going to take another call. Thank you for being patient and holding. You are on the air. Are you still there? Hello? Hello, hello? Putting you back on hold, and I'm grabbing the next caller. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, great. Well, I'm very happy to get to ask a question and make a comment, so I'll keep it to the point. I'm personally pretty curious why these corporations, including the ones that you're employed by, have not been asked to do an environmental impact statement about the land that you're utilizing here on our island. And if you were asked to do that, is that something that you would do? A simple yes or no will do.
Yes.
Yeah. Environmental impact statement.
Yeah, and I think we had
think
to do that
do.
Before
I think
we
have had to do one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you did do one, and it was it came back okay. Came back positive, like you could keep going, that you weren't going to have a environmental impact on our island?
Yes, otherwise we wouldn't be able to farm.
And what we have seen here, and as it becomes environmental impact, is, you know, one of those things that people can just, some agency can decide, like sugar definitely had a profound environmental impact. And so it might be, well, compared to sugar, is it pretty close? Is it worse?
Yeah, and I know because I handle new traits when they come in or different crops. And I know there's a process where the Hawaii Department of Ag does a thorough investigation as far as are there any cross-compatible species or anything that these crops could outcross with and create issues down the line. And they do a really thorough investigation of that. And they won't allow the crop to come if there is concern for that or them. They'll impart some controls for that.
Right. And so, Peter, you've only been on island for a year, correct?
That's correct.
So it might be that you're underinformed about maybe what's happened in the past. Like I'm having people say no environmental impact was done. So
sure, and certainly it's not just to do with other plants growing on the island, but it would also affect our oceans and our reefs that are just outside of you guys there, where you do use so many chemicals, and it's pretty clear that they do find their way into our reef system, not to mention the soil biology. Well, so that's enough on that. I mostly just want to offer some advice, you know, business-wise, is it's pretty clear that the game's up. I mean, across the planet, people don't want GMO food anymore, and the resistance to labeling is really just a clear, obvious dodge of what's to come. So business advice is you might want to look into some other types of farming, because I think that's the kind of food people want to eat in the future.
Thank you so much.
Sure, absolutely. Aloha. Okay.
Aloha. And I have now had three different texts from people who are
I'm getting texted
somewhat
like crazy too.
Pretty inside, and I know pretty diligent at looking at things, and they're all saying no true EIS was done. So we're going to take the next call. Would you
ask I'm just not sure if that what agency does environmental inspect. I'm not sure that it falls under. We're regulated by the USDA locally and the Hawaii Department of Ag, and then the Soil Resource Conservation District to make sure that our conservation and our you know, water's not flowing out of our farms too. So I mean,
to do construction, we're building some new buildings. To do construction, you have to, you know, do studies. You have to. So I was not here at the time that we got the permits, but, you know, we followed the permitting process. We did the studies that we were required to do to farm and to build buildings. So
right. And
I
this
guess I may just be confused.
You're probably
for.
Confused. This show, we do a lot of stuff on the Public Land Development Corporation, these public-private partnerships, mm-hmm. and all these different subtle things. And the EIS and the EA process, Environmental Impact Statement and Environmental Assessment, those are things that if you have enough money, you can definitely abuse it or avoid it. I'm not speaking necessarily of your industries. But, you know, when they start launching missiles, literally they start launching all these big missiles and their environmental impact statement just says no significant impact. You're like, are you kidding? You know, you can't launch a missile and have all that stuff come out the back end and that there's no environmental impact, but that's what it says. It's just pretty much blank. So it you know, that gets to this core of power versus maybe powerless. The miscellaneous person might feel powerless.
I just know from the, you know, the regulated crop side that the USDA is, a lot of their questions are direct about environmental impact with these crops. So I don't want you listeners to think it's not being asked of us and whatnot.
Right. So. Like I'm definitely hearing, and I'm sure that you guys are going through what for you feels arduous. And then it's just maybe for what other people are actually looking for. The people who are regulating you aren't even looking for the same things. Like you guys saw the microherd in my soil today.
Mm-hmm.
If what I wanted to see in an environmental impact statement was living soil, you'd fail that test, right? But you're not claiming to not fail that test. But, I mean, we all have a different layer. I'm going to call. And by the way, listeners, I don't know everything either. I'm just doing my best. Aloha, you're on the air. Okay, let's go quick because I'm going to take this and two more calls and then we're pow.
Okay, my name is Chief Robert Molyneux.
Okay, Robert, can you talk to the phone more clearly? We can barely hear you. Bring your mouth up to the phone. Are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Now I can, yes, thank you.
Can you hear me now?
I can. So, okay. Kingdom of Atuai, yes.
You know, the king's out of town right now. Yesterday morning, they had a press conference from the United Nations of the king introducing our coins into the currency, our new currency that's coming out from the kingdom.
Okay.
You know, this is all have to stop. But the thing about what's going on with the process, it's not Peter's fault, and it's not their fault, because part of it is, but the other part is the state and the people who are allowing them to come here and do this. So, there's a solution to everything. And what the solution the kingdom looking for is we're going to utilize Peter and his group and what they're doing on that land. First of all, you can't just kick them out because we got to replenish this land. We have to restructure this land so we can grow real food back on them. And also, we're willing to offer him to be part of the kingdom and start growing food for the kingdom. So, one thing we know, we're on a very small tropical island. It's very small. The golf courses and everything is ruining our reefs. We know that. I'm a fisherman. I see it daily. This poison and these pesticides that they've been using has to stop, and it is going to stop to the order of the king.
So
with the cease and desist order. We're not going to be blatantly going after people, but we're going to make it work. We're going to have to work with each other and not blame each other and start get away from that. We got to actually work with each other so we can restore this land for the betterment of our people.
So, Robert, you know, if there was parcels of land that were looking to be food forested out or be reclaimed in that area, would you and your people be somebody who might be interested in actually helping with that?
Well, through the process, well, what we're doing right now with the kingdom, through our recognition, once we're all done, see, all lands return back to the kingdom. not partial, all lands, all said lands in the book returns to the kingdom.
Okay.
Then we reconstruct from there. We're not going to stop everybody what they're doing, but we're going to have to, like I said, utilize who's on the land, utilize the offices that is in place, and not, you know, make a major disaster over the kingdom turning over. Because you know what? The kingdom is about peace and love. And whatever is going to work, we're going to make it work. You know, it's not going to be a war about making it work. It's going to be a peaceful walk and a peaceful way. I'm really surprised with the people that's been coming out. They have been very patient and very peaceful with what you guys have been doing to the land. But, you know, like I said, you know, God said forgive everybody for what they have done. So he's not going to forgive you people. Remember that. So let's make it work. Come to the kingdom. We get meetings every Tuesday night in Kekaha at 6:30 at the neighborhood pavilion. Show up, you know, be a part of what we're doing, because let me tell you, it's unstoppable. And like I said, they just had a press release yesterday morning in the United Nations with the King Aleka Aipoalani, which is the head of the Royal Union of the Pacific Nations, speaking and introducing our coins that has been released.
Congratulations. Congratulations on that recognition.
You know, and like I said, Peter, you know, we got to work together. And it's not about blaming each other or trying to squeeze water out of a rock. It's about making it work so we can move that rock so water can come out from the under the rock, you know. So, you know, these people, we got to remember, yeah, it is bad for us. We all know that. We're not born yesterday. We all know that these pesticides will affect and will harm our kids. You know, whether it's on land or in the, you know, that can actually cause you from not even having kids.
Right.
And we know what the whole Down syndrome is, so we got to stop and we got to finish. So
thank
we've been
you.
Talking to him, and the king is ready to do something. So, you know, it's about time we all get together and make it work.
So thank you so much.
Time, you know?
I appreciate your willingness to talk.
Okay, yes. Thank you.
Okay, God bless.
God bless. Thank you. Now we're almost POW. I'm taking one last call, and then we're going to... Okay, go ahead.
I am also using the electronic text messaging here, and yes, we have, as a field trial, we have grown enlist crops on our land on Kauai. So we have had some enlist increases on Kauai via what Kirby was saying with the regulated fields.
And so that uses 2,4-D?
No, it's just it just has a trait in there that makes it resistant to 2,4-D.
Okay.
2,4-D is a common herbicide that we spray on a number of our crops.
Oh, okay, that's scary. We're all scared.
It's one of the herbicides that we use.
Okay. Thank you for being honest about that. And Jazz with John is coming up soon. We're going to take one more call, and then you're on the air. You're on the air. Hello?
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yes, and then you got to be real quick because I'm almost
okay.
Powered.
I keep hearing phrases like crop improvement and inserting viruses for greater DNA into viruses for greater efficiency, and appropriate for field testing, which obviously requires pesticides, herbicides. What I'd like to point out is the broader picture is for the... Ever since the agricultural revolution started, we have been deteriorating the genetic makeup of natural plants and animals. We have been deteriorating genetic makeup. Well, scientifically speaking, GMO is genetic pollution. These crops that are genetically modified cannot compete with the natural ecosystems if the ecosystems are healthy. Nowadays, the ecosystems are very often trashed out precisely because of pesticides and herbicides and thousands of different types of toxins and radiation and all this stuff. We have to get serious about sustainability, which means we have to get serious about rebalancing with nature. We can't continue to try and violate nature and pretend that that's progress. It's not crop improvement. It's crop deterioration.
Humans have been deteriorating nature for centuries, for millennia.
Arias?
That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. And then that's going to be our last call. And what I want to say to that point to the listener is that these two gentlemen have spent 7 hours hearing that and being shown that with a very open mind. They've been listening and looking and being very receptive to looking at what I would call a little bit more living soil. Jazz with John is up next. We are going to be hearing the county council report. We're going to go around the room really quick. Eric, you had a very, very fast announcement. Connecticut, just...
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Fast.
Okay, let's see. That was on Facebook, the Connecticut Senate. Sorry, I want to get the exact...
Pass the GMO labeling bill 35-1.
Yeah, 35-1.
He just did show me that. Okay, Ken, your last aloha to the audience today. Thank you for being the bridge person here. I know you've been kind of quiet.
Oh, no problem. I'm just here to kind of listen and see what's up.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. And thanks for the audience for your questions and, We look forward to talking some more.
Okay, that was Kirby from BASF and Peter from Dow.
Again, thank you, Felicia, for helping us to start this conversation. I hope this isn't the end. I hope we can continue this dialogue and continue to to talk story and just to air some of these things out. You know, I'm definitely hearing the deep concerns that people have, and we want to be open. We want to be more transparent. And, I apologize if my corporate ease gets in the way of that every once in a while. But, I do hope that we can keep the conversation going. And I just so appreciate you having us on here.
And we appreciate you guys coming out. Seriously,
yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And this tone that's come through on the radio, I've been listening to this for 2 years of being on the radio. And when I came into this show, I wasn't paying attention to GMOs. After 6 months, I started to pay attention, and I went, huh, okay. Mm-hmm. So over time, I've really listened, and there's a very big voice that's like this. So we appreciate you guys coming into the conversation, and much love to everybody, Kathy Hamyoung, Herb Pfeffer, celebration this Saturday. Be there. Aloha.
Aloha.